Mini episode 26 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by First Down Scouting, delivering the most thorough scouting service available, uncovering the NFL stars of tomorrow.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to mini episode number 26 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here with you tonight. We're going to have a very, very special guest joining us momentarily. I want to thank our good friends over at Sportsology, specifically our good friend Russ Cohen, for making this platform available to us as per always. We've been using this recently for when we've been working with guests as opposed to doing roundtables, and the infrastructure is very critical for us here in the short term as we're getting into the process of starting to handle our own distribution. So Russ Cohen, a great friend to us, and it's very, very much appreciated. Tonight is going to be tremendous. We're going to be joined momentarily by a legend in the world of mixed martial arts, a four-time UFC heavyweight champion, and a gentleman who also was very successful in the professional wrestling industry as well. And while those get bounced together sometimes in the public mind, they actually are very different vocations, as anybody who's ever spent time in both can tell you. But so it really takes a lot to, I guess you would say, go beyond cross-training even, but to be successful in both industries as he had been. I speak, of course, of Ken Shamrock, who will be on the line with us here as part of our celebration of the 500th hour of the FDH Lounge. We were able to kick this off last week with mini episode number 24, Bob Barker coming back on for his fourth appearance. We talked to him about his beloved St. Louis Cardinals in the World Series, and we also spent a little bit of time talking about the very unfortunate massacre of the animals down in Zanesville, Ohio, that was necessitated by the very deranged individual who set them all loose and forced the authorities to take them out to protect the public. So Bob was very eloquent on that subject. We started with Bob Barker, and of course we had our weekly fantasy football update over the weekend. We have Ken Shamrock here with us tonight, and next week, this is the first time we're announcing this now, to celebrate getting up to 500 hours, we're going to have, by the way, a fantasy football update this weekend as well. But before that, what's going to take us up to 500 hours is going to be the fifth edition of the FDH Lounge Pantheon. We will be getting together to celebrate the best of the best in many different walks of life. And it's going to be four mini episodes that we're going to be putting together. We're going to be spending between 20 and 30 minutes on each one, and it's going to be on three topics apiece. And culminating, I believe, with financial journalist William Cohen next week, who we've had on previously, who is one of the great authors about Wall Street and the different things that have been happening there the last couple of years. So it's a tremendous walkthrough celebrating 500 hours of the FDH Lounge. As I say, starting with Bob Barker last week, tonight with Ken Shamrock, who's going to be on with us. Next week, as I say, I believe it will be William Cohen at the end of the week, but before that, we're going to be doing the fifth edition of the FDH Lounge Pantheon. But tonight's guest, this is a very special thing for us to be doing on the program, because we love having individuals on who, as I said, are proficient in different areas. And again, don't let anybody fool you. MMA and pro wrestling have a world of differences between them, and yet he was very successful in both of those. A UFC Hall of Famer, a world champion in the UFC as well as in professional wrestling, holding the oldest championship in professional wrestling, the NWA World Heavyweight title. And we also love individuals who have a very positive streak about them and who are dedicated to trying to make things better around them. And he's leveraged what was a difficult childhood and the lessons from it to try to make things better for other people. So we're very appreciative of everything he's trying to do, and to get a chance to speak with him here tonight and spread the word about everything that's going on with him. And we have on the program, we're very happy to have on, the legend Ken Shamrock with us here. Ken, welcome to the FDH Lounge, sir. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm doing well, and thank you for having me on.
That's a pleasure, Ken. Big fan. Very happy to have you on the program. I actually, the one time I've ever seen you in person, actually, I was at King of the Ring 98 in Pittsburgh there. You and The Rock, I guess it was set up more or less as a revenge match from WrestleMania, but you taking the King of the Ring championship. And what a crazy time it was in that business, huh? When you look at everything that you've done, everything that Dwayne Johnson did and would go on to do, to have you two guys intersecting right there 1998 shows you just how crazy the Attitude Era was.
Well, it was definitely an enjoyable time. I know it was probably a scary time for WWF or WWE in this day and age, but you know, there was a lot of wars going on with the WCW. A lot of the players had left and gone over there, and the guys that stayed at the WWF, Vince was trying to find how he could build back up his program, and the ratings were going, challenging each other on Monday Night Raw and SmackDown, and it was an exciting time because you had, you know, the foes, you had people to compete against, and it was really exciting. And of course, we all know how that turned out. Vince won again and ended up pushing the WWF up to be the number one wrestling program in the world.
Exactly, and the thing that I find very interesting, you sort of set the template for what we've been seeing in the last couple of years with everything with Brock Lesnar, and he's really taken a lot of heat from some of the purists out there for having gotten involved in pro wrestling. I didn't remember that being the case as much with you. Am I wrong about that? Did you take a lot of crap from some of the MMA purists, or were they more accepting of your forays into pro wrestling?
Well, at the time when I actually made the move, MMA was hurting. You know, we lost the TV pay-per-view, so we were basically trying to go underground and do it on any reservations and casinos and different places where there wasn't a regulation. So the exposure that I had on that was quite limited because we didn't have the coverage we needed, and a lot of guys were having to make money elsewhere. Because of the way it is today, there's a lot of coverage, a lot of media, a lot of Facebook, a lot of websites. There's just so much more exposure to the people. So I would imagine that he's going to hear more people say, "I didn't like what you did," rather than what I had to, because there wasn't as much communication back then. Now it's wide open. But I believe he's got more people that stood behind him than not. The only reason why he would have people that would be more negative towards him is because when he first came in, some of the ways that he handled certain situations weren't very well. But again, you know, that's what happens when you're a rookie and you're coming into a sport. You're trying to figure things out on your own and you're moving fast. And, you know, we all make mistakes.
Absolutely, and I got to believe you were probably cut a lot of leeway by the MMA purists, because again, really, you were one of the founding fathers of UFC, and I think that's one of the key reasons that you made the Hall of Fame. But those early fights that you had on pay-per-view, they went down in history, I think, as being very instrumental to the growth of UFC and what it would go on to become.
Well, no doubt. You know, I hear a lot of people talk about it. You know, T. Ortiz being a great adversary for me, I think that the plants lined up, the media jumped on board, and Tito was a great opponent for me. He presented kind of the bad boy image, and I presented more of the purest MMA coming back from the beginning over in Japan for a stint. And it was just a great setup, and I think the way that Tito handled it, and the way that I handled it, and obviously the way that the UFC presented it, it just boomed. And I think that if you look at it, I really truly believe that those matches between me and Tito Ortiz surely generated UFC to be where it's at today. And no question, it also built stars like Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, and many, many others.
Absolutely, and the fights that you had there, also with Dan Severn, it was very interesting. You guys ended up in the same place at the same time in the WWF in 1998. They were not as successful conjuring up anything that would work out there. Ironically, in a place where the outcome could be controlled, but that was always something that people were wondering if they were going to have you guys hook up there. But the reason so many people were wondering was that it was very interesting having had the rivalry carrying over from UFC and the controversy of those fights.
Yeah, no doubt. I know back in the earlier days of the UFC, you know, the very first feud was me and Royce Gracie. And me and Gracie were very fortunate to be where we were at and be able to carry that feud and get the fans involved. And then there was a short time there where it was me and Chemo. And then after that, of course, Dan Severn. And there was some controversial things that happened in that second match between me and him. And then it carried over into wrestling. Unfortunately, in wrestling, I just don't believe the timing on that was there. So that's why it kind of faded.
It was, what were the exact circumstances when you, for the benefit of those who weren't following the details of it as closely, when you did leave UFC and when you did accept the offer from Vince back in 97 and go over there, of course, you started off as, again, a special referee for what a lot of people would call maybe the greatest match of the decade, the legendary Bret Hart-Steve Austin match at WrestleMania 13, and you went on to have a very, very good run from there. Intercontinental Champion, WWF Tag Team Champion, as we referenced previously, 1998 King of the Ring. But what were the things that set the stage for your return to wrestling? Because after all, I know you had started in the Carolina Indies back in the day and had been doing that even before MMA. What were the things that set it up for you to come back with Vince?
I think mostly because of the way the industry was with MMA, there just wasn't anything there that I could really continue to do MMA and support my family. So I had to start looking elsewhere. And my father was a big-time fan of pro wrestling for a long time. I had watched every now and then. I truly didn't understand much of it. But then when it was presented to me by my father, and, of course, I did do it earlier on, and it was entertaining for me. So I went ahead and I tried it again. I went out there, I bought the platform that Vince set up for me where I could actually be me, who I was, and go out and do the submissions that I was used to doing in the fights. And as you know, when I started doing pro wrestling, they used a rear naked choke basically as a resting hold. Now, if you look at the World Wrestling Federation, the World Wrestling Entertainment industry, there are all kinds of submissions now since that time where I entered the WWF until now. Now you see chokes and leg locks and arm bars and hammer locks and submissions galore. So wrestling sure did change, and that's one thing about Vince McMahon and that I've always admired about him, was that he always paid attention to the landscape and how things were changing, and he tried to adapt to that with the pro wrestling.
Well, it really worked out well. You had a tremendous run with them there, and what were some of the things that you found, again, coming back into it, having done MMA and big-time UFC in the interim, in the space between when you'd started out wrestling the independents back in the Carolinas there, what were some things, if any, that you had to adjust on as far as working style or anything else like that? Because you'd been caught up in, you know, very serious competition and going out and basically trying to hit people as hard as you can. Was it any kind of a transition to get back into showing the entertaining side, throwing working punches, etc.?
Oh, absolutely. I think for the biggest thing for me was being able to go out and have the guys, my opponents, trust me. Being able to allow me to do things and they have confidence that I'm not going to really lay into them. So there was a lot of that at first, is just building trust and letting them know that, hey, I'm a rookie and I'm all ears. So, you know, coach me, teach me, I want to learn. And I think for the first probably 3 or 4 months, that's what it was, a feeling out process and gaining trust with the people that I were working with. After that, it was really about understanding the psychological building matches from the end to the finish and being able to have people, the fans, understand what it is and what story we were trying to tell, along with the emotions that you had to time in the ring. So for me, it was just basically understanding all that, gaining trust, and learning how this business truly works and being able to understand the mood and the transition for the fans.
It was a great run that you had, and again, and a couple of years later, you would get back into it just briefly with NWA TNA as they were starting to get off the ground there and becoming the first NWA World Champion under their version of the promotion there. Before I segue back into the MMA, talk about that time there and being the first guy to hold the belt as that promotion was getting off the ground.
Well, it was exciting for me because I got to go up and actually go back into pro wrestling, which is something I really did enjoy. I love traveling, and I love doing all the moves and the impact of that. But, you know, traveling, a whole bunch like that, I really started to space and get too much distance from my kids and my family, so I needed to do something different. Well, they gave me an opportunity to be able to go down once a month and be able to show up for TV and work on their show, and to me, that was a perfect scenario. Unfortunately, because they were moving so fast and developing so much talent, and the guys that were developing were able to spend more time to perfect, you know, the industry and help them grow, I wasn't able to do that, and that is the reason why I believe I had such a short time there. Was they were growing so fast, and I wasn't really growing with them.
Well, and that kind of takes us on the timeline as we start to advance up to the present day here with some of the subsequent UFC fights there, and the rivalry, as you referred to before, with Tito Ortiz and the things that would come subsequently. The fights that you had after your return from NWA TNA are certainly among the ones that you're best known for. I mean, like I said before, you helped get UFC off the ground in the first place, but the ones from 2002 to about 2006, really, it seemed like helped consolidate the growth of UFC, didn't they?
Well, in the very first UFC, it was Horace Grayson and myself, and we were growing huge and quickly. Then we ran into some of the commission and some of the politics that shut us off being able to do pay-per-view. That's when I made my move into pro wrestling, and then I came back into the UFC when the Fertittas took over. And they were actually bringing it to the actual commission and being able to get it legalized. And they started out in Nevada. And when I was brought in, I believe they were doing, I don't know, about 40,000 buys. And they were hurting. And from my understanding, they were getting ready to pretty much pull the plug if they couldn't pull something out in the next year or so. Well, when they brought me in, you know, I said, hey, you know, I would love to be able to compete and fight here again, and I think it'd be great. And so they gave me that opportunity, and when we did that, the very first fight with Tito Ortiz, it went from 40,000 buys to 140,000 buys. So, and then from that time on, it went from 600,000 buys to 1 million buys. So the ratings definitely came in at the right time. Everybody did their job to promote the fight, and, along with Tito and myself, the great feud. In fact, you know, the Best Damn Sports Show gave us an award for the best feud of the year. So everything was working out really well for that, and I believe those were the years that put the UFC where they're at today.
Absolutely, yeah. That seems to be the period of time that I think any fair observer would say really kind of consolidated the growth and helped take things to a new plateau. In the years subsequently, of course, you've continued on with your fighting, with your training as well with Lion's Den, and hearing an awful lot these days about a possibility of something cross sport here, perhaps akin to Ali and Inoki back in '76. You and James Toney, what's the present status of that and where any type of cross-sport fight might lie?
Well, right now it's just basically in the talk process, but kind of what I would like to do is I would like to kind of, you know, modify the rules, because as we know, James Toney is a phenomenal boxer. He's had a great career. I know when he fought in the UFC, they took away his shoes and basically put him in against one of the best grapplers in the UFC, so really, the way the rules were set up and him walking into that kind of a fight had no chance except for maybe a lucky punch. And, of course, Randy took that away right away by shooting, you know, 3 or 4 feet away from him, being able to give him no chance to land anything. Then once he was on the ground, basically it was all over after that. So what we want to try and do is make the fight interesting. You know, we're going to modify the rules a bit. I don't want to get into the rules and all that until we actually get them to where we want them, and then we'll bring them out. But we want to make it exciting, and that way, you know, James Toney coming from a boxing world, coming into this basically no holds barred MMA world, that's got some guts to it. You know what I'm saying? And why throw him in there and not really give an opportunity for him to have some sort of success? So that's kind of our idea with the fight. Because if you just put him in there in an MMA fight, fans know what's going to happen. You know, he's going to be taken down, the fight is over. So we're going to make it a little more interesting.
Well, that's pretty smart because, yeah, the expectation is that a boxer under normal circumstances is just kind of going to get guzzled once you have that ability to fight standing up, taken away. So that's smart to do. It's very interesting to me in noticing on your website you had a column and a video from a couple of months back here addressing the media and their kind of take on you continuing to fight and continuing to get involved in the ring here. Do you draw any kind of a distinction in your mind between any kind of cheap shots from the media and legitimate concern on behalf of your fans? Because I know a lot of people look at it and say, hey, nobody's immune from the aging process. These things happen. Maybe you lose the ability to protect yourself quite as well as age escalates. Do you separate that in your mind, or is it all just kind of negativity to you whenever anybody questions anything about continuing to fight?
Listen, when you're in the entertainment business, you have to be able to suck it up. Because there's nothing really off limits. The minute you start taking things personal and you start getting upset about what's being shot at you, you know, you never can win that. So basically, you know, whenever anything comes my way and it's negative, I'm not looking at this person as who's trying to hurt me on purpose. It's a question. It's probably one that most people want to know. And there are some concerns out there about aging athletes. But the one thing that I really like to point out the most is the fact is when you're doing something pretty much my entire life has been dedicated to MMA, to building MMA, and to also fighting in MMA, that's something that is very, very difficult just to turn off. And the way I look at it is I am enjoying myself. I put in the years to be able to help build and be responsible for help building certain organizations, and I had to do that every single day. And there is some stress that go along with that. I'm at a point in time in my life and my career where I can go out and I can compete and I can have fun and entertain the fans with no pressure. And to me, I think, and in a lot of other athletes who have put in their time, should have that right to enjoy themselves for a few years.
Absolutely. I would hope nobody is begrudging you being an MMA lifer because, you know, it's something, of course, that you're always going to want to be immersed in, having come up in it as you have. And as we indicated at the top here, kind of bringing it full circle about kind of leveraging not just your life in MMA, but some of the life lessons that you've taken from it, from everything you learned from Bob Shamrock. Ultimately, now moving ahead, I understand we got word from your management that in addition to your motivational speaking, that you've got the Shamrock Home for Boys that's being built in Northern Nevada. So talk about that and how it all plays in and helping to impart some of these lessons to the next generations here the same way that they were imparted to you.
Yeah, you know, kind of what we're doing is I want to develop what we call as a Shamrock Boys and Girls Home. There'll be two separate homes from each other, and there'll be 100 boys and 100 girls in each of those facilities. And just so as I can explain to the fans and to some of the people that are interested in getting involved out there, is that I was one of those kids. I was a kid that grew up in basically a home where the parents weren't home. They were involved in a lot of different stuff. My two older brothers, they went away. They were in placement, jail, prison, different things like that. I got an adopted younger brother, Frank Shamrock, who went through the same home I did, and I was a peer counselor at the time when he came through. And the thing to me is that it without Bob Shamrock, the one who adopted me and had the home, if he didn't take an interest and time to turn around and figure out who I was and what was bothering me and how to correct it, I wouldn't be where I'm at today, nor would Frank, nor would a lot of kids that went through that home. He was one of the good ones, one of the ones that cared. And because of that, I'm here today to be able to turn around and do the same thing. I have a great opportunity. I've been blessed with an opportunity in a bigger scale because of the famousness I've been able to accumulate over the years with the fans who know me and follow me, that I can turn around through having that and be able to have these kids come into these homes and look at me as a role model and go, I want to be like that. And I'll be able to show them how to do that. To me, that's very important. And I think if athletes, and a lot of them do, if every athlete that competed in whatever sport they competed in, or actor or actress or singer, rapper, whatever it is, would turn around and go back to their own communities and they help out the kids in their community, can you imagine what the world would be like today if we took on that responsibility? Well, I'm starting it off. I'm going to do that, and I'm going to be getting these kids in there, and I'm going to be helping them out. And anybody, whether actor, actress, singer, whatever, wants to get involved and help me with this project, you can go to www.lifeshots, and shots is spelled shots.com/KenShamrock. And if anybody wants to get involved and help us out, we're looking for anybody that wants to do that, but we're going to do it. We're going with it. And we've already had meetings and town meetings and school district meetings, and everybody's on board in doing this. And this is something where I truly believe in, and that my heart is there very strongly, is to turn around and help these kids have a future, have a new start in life. And that is my purpose today.
Well, Ken, to answer your rhetorical question, yeah, I think we would all agree the world would be a much better place if others were giving back on this type of scale. I certainly hope that your efforts will be an example to other athletes and entertainers to do the same. We always give our guests a chance to plug here at the end. I know that, again, KenShamrock.com, I know that's a tremendous hub for everything that you've got going on. You've got links there to the Lion's Den team, Lion's Den Ministries, information about the home. But anything additionally that we didn't cover, Ken, please take it away.
No, actually, I think that's our focus, you know. My desire in my life at this point in time, obviously I want to stay in training, and the Lions are fight team, and we've got other fights that we've got coming up with some of our young fighters that are going to be fighting. We're rebuilding, and we're going to build a new face to the Lions Den. We got some young kids coming up. I got some of my boys that are coming up, my nephew, my son-in-law. So the family is going to carry that Lions Den thing on along with a lot of other young fighters. So we're very interested and very excited about that. But the most important thing now is just trying to get this home up and going, and to give these kids a new shot at life. You know, it's my turn now. My dad did it for me. Did a great, great job with a lot of kids. But, you know, now it's time for me to pay it forward. So it's my turn now. So that's my main focus.
Well, it's a very virtuous cycle you've got going on there, Ken. We really appreciate it. We're big fans and big fans of what you're doing. We appreciate you coming on, sir. We'd love to have you back on anytime.
Well, I thank you for having me, and you guys truly have a blessed day.
Oh, thank you. You too, Ken. Thank you. We appreciate it so much. Ken, the great Ken Shamrock, everyone, legend of UFC and pro wrestling. This has been FDH Lounge, mini episode number 26.